I'm Christopher Lydon, sampling young people's poetry that is louder than a bomb, with Anna West, who co-founded the Louder Than a Bomb program with the Young Chicago Authors. She's now figuring how to build such a platform for high school poets all around the country. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. This one extends a conversation we've had on whose words these are about the making of poetry in America in 2011. Anna West, you're a poet and now a sort of Johnny Appleseed of performance poetry. Give us a sample out of your own work and out of the kids' work that you're developing.
Absolutely. We'll start with a poem called Leaving Chicago. This is my poem. I ride with my back south on the southbound train, eyes full of big shoulders, concrete and glass, muscle skyscrapes slipping through the drain of eyes. This is a fall backwards into the green shawl, southern still, a girl 17 in 10 years want to float off me now, like as if it'd been easy. Ignore the ghost-rattling reflection taped to train window, begging a way back, until the chain fences and gut yards of Gary, Indiana, finally silence this view. But I hold her. Blue swoop of lake careening, carload swerving Saturday night heights. She has shown me how her blue and red veins, her circle of brown iris, flickering sun between the forest of building, Harold Washington Library, Fannie Mae, and perch on Fulton Street, chocolate and Italian bread in the air over the river. I rode my bike blue like a bird because I was 22 just once and wore a silver scarf and red hoop earrings to dance Africa. Shot up the red line past Rick the graveyards in Uptown with its ghost of Capone and Ethiopian eyes buried in the screeching bus. She is the smell of salt scrape and the January weeping for a bathtub or a sun. Salson in Humboldt Park, wick cards and Goya cans. She is the prayer recited by masses of puffy black coats forming one cloud of streetwise breath. I've read all her murals, buried my head in their yellows on gray days when Ashland Avenue was a Sisyphus rock paved flat, when Pilsen air suffocated by means of factory and treelessness, when tortillerias rumbled hungry tongues over summer nights. Part of me is standing in a Ukrainian grocery on Western Ave, marveling at European cheeses and chocolates in orange foil. Part of me is still stripping in the piss aisles of six-corner thrift stores, pulling a pink nightgown over my head and staring into an alleyway with a cigarette at midnight on the back stoop, freezing and crying, feeling like a poem under a shelter of soggy cardboard and wool blankets, scheming some other life far from here. And it is true that this world would close one day, would rock each of us finally on the rims of home, watching the reel go black like the last view from the last car in the subway.
How many voices should we be hearing in that poem?
Probably about 40 voices. You know, it's that. I think that's what I do as a poet. I pile on. It's a bit of collage, you know.
Introduce yourself, Anna West, as the girl who came from Baton Rouge through Chicago to the Harvard Graduate School of Education.
Yes. So my story, it begins in Baton Rouge, and I'm a daughter of the South there, and born and raised in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, but of course, like any sane person, left as soon as I possibly could. At age 17, I was out, and I thought I would never go back there again. I spent my 20s in Chicago. I went to Chicago because I fell in love with the poetry of Gwendolyn Brooks, with the idea of Jane Addams, with the history of that city, and I knew that it would be a place, I think, that would hold me and help me to grow. And so I spent my 20s there, and then when I turned 30, I moved home to Baton Rouge, which was in 2005. Interestingly, just a few weeks before Katrina hit, and of course the whole landscape changed immensely in Louisiana, which was a very interesting time to start a poetry program for young people in the schools and communities of Baton Rouge. I'm going to go home to Baton Rouge again next year and continue working there, but I'll also be working on a PhD that I think is going to become an opportunity to think about this work on a national level and think about building the landscape for this work.
Anna West, it's fascinating to me that at the Massachusetts Poetry Festival this year, it's the performance poets who have seized the initiative, and you seem to be sort of out front of them. What's happening?
Well, let's see. The performance poets that will be there are part of a group that we formed in February called Mass Leap Collective. That's LEAP stands for Literary Education and Performance. And so what we've done is just through a series of conversations. So there have been these conversations that kind of have gone on for years among some of us. So I've known several people that are part of that initiative for years, because there's a national community of people that are interested in work with young people, and particularly performance work, because that work is such a vital work. Poetry and performance and youth, it's this intersection that is just kind of explosive. And those of us who are inside of that world know what that is and the power of that. And so we're anxious for the world to see it and for it to grow and for there to be more opportunities for young people to be involved in that work.
I want to hear the explosion. Louder Than a Bomb is also a movie. Give us the sound of it.
Yeah, great. Well, can I play you a poem?
Please.
Great. This is a young poet from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Chase Chenevert is his name. And, of course, Louder Than a Bomb takes place in Chicago. And I think there's a tendency for us to think that this kind of work happens in only in these urban settings, that places like Chicago and New York and San Francisco, where you sort of see the visible edge of this kind of edgy, exciting youth cultural work. And I think it's really exciting for people to hear that this is happening in places like Baton Rouge. It's happening in places like Worcester, you know? It's happening in places that are maybe not in the epicenter of what we think of as kind of youth culture. So this is Chase Chenevert, and I think it's a good representative piece.
When Mama cooked in the kitchen, she never needed to tell us when dinner was ready, because the aroma of whatever she was cooking swept through our nose and made our stomachs growl. We knew whatever was on that stove was gonna stick to our bones and silence the beast in our bellies, but I didn't know she made food for thought until I tasted her dirty rice for the first time. And I gotta tell you about Mama's dirty rice. Sticky white rice was dressed in blazers of spicy cayenne. Hums of bell peppers, green bravado sang a chorus of culture like a Southern Baptist choir during revival in this silver pot that was sweating just as much. The beef was as soft and brown as fertile soil from the Nile and gave much flavor as it retained. Mama made east meet west, flew north-south for the winter, and enfolded the four corners of this earth into this dish that is more than just familiar. It wasn't easy for Mama to teach identity to her two mixed sons when this world provided none. But she did the teaching simply, serving my history of a mixed lineage mystery on a plate as a dish called dirty rice. But she couldn't have made it if Daddy didn't help her. And together, they mixed their makings into two sons. It was neither his hand the color of dirt, nor her fingers the color of his rib that did this alone. And none of this was really a problem until I was told I had to choose one. Recognizing that I was part something else was selling out, but being black was fitting in, and my mother and father didn't fit in. And I have tripped over insecurity in this American sport called race for the last time. So as I hit the ground, I'm letting my mouth fly open. I am as dirty as this rice, littered with culture. I am the impure half-caste whose blood gleams a color other than red to them. I am the mutt whose spots can't be washed away, but the pot of my many cultures was not melted by the heat of a jungle fever. And I will be
well,
the exception to the rule.
In many ways, what this work is doing is creating spaces for young people to claim themselves and to contextualize themselves. In Chicago, Louder Than a Bomb is a poetry slam festival. There are, I think at this point, maybe 550 or so, somewhere around 600 young people, high school age teenagers every year who participate in the festival in teams that come. They convene together. They sort of swarm upon the city of Chicago downtown in February, and there's this stage after stage. It's a huge, you know, 2-week-long festival where we hear their stories and we hear their voices and we hear them claiming themselves and contextualizing themselves. In a slam poem, you have 3 minutes to stand up and do your thing. So if you think about it, I think the experience of what it is to be a teenager and what it is to to kind of feel that your identity is pressed upon you in some ways. 3 minutes is an extraordinary amount of time to stand in front of your peers and to be able to actually add some layers of complexity to your life, you know, to claim all of the tributaries, like we hear Chase doing in this poem, that feed into who you are and the meaning that you're making out of that, right? And it's a live art form, and I think it's very important that it's a live art form because it's participatory in a total sense, because the audience and the world of spoken word, the audience co-constructs that performance with the performer. The performer is not in an iron lung somewhere. Right? That performer, that poet, is speaking their truth and their world into a room where others are receiving it and instantly sort of feeding back, right? So there's just, the audience is very active, you know, they make a lot of noise. I think a lot of people hear slam and they think like that it's this sort of like, you know, sort of harsh thing, you get slammed, you know, and that's the kind of irony, I think, of the name slam, because what ends up happening is it becomes a circle of community around those voices. And I think that's very important for young people.
Give us a taste, Anna.
Sure. So this is DeAndre Hill, also a young person down in Baton Rouge. This poem I love, it's kind of an ode to writing itself and the role of writing in his life. We hear this a lot in spoken word with youth. We hear a lot of poems that are about the experience itself of this identity that of being a writer, of what it means to become a writer.
I never knew human beings had so much power. Human beings have the power to create monumental statues of their gods, and with sore hands, still can press their palms together tightly, giving thanks for their tired bodies. Break the fourth wall of imagination. Take free time and friends, give them a blend, and birth memories suspended on silver wings. Sing songs for perfect times forever, and we can swag surf with the best of them. But when sanity leaves us, those hands can become weapons. Throw bodies onto unforgiving flaming piles of books. Sacrifice sacred lives by fire. And I never knew human beings had so much power. And in my own life, that power was held in the hands of a landlord, armed with nothing but the key to our home, an army of titans, chipping away treasures from my Mount Olympus, taking things that did not belong to her. My shoes, my TV, my brother's clothes, my mother's joy. And I wonder, were her hands scorched when she took my uncle's ashes? Did the Bible that held my grandmother's only picture liquefy lucid under Lucifer's laughter? And I find myself wanting to strike, wanting to fight, close my fists, swing with a murderous intent till my bare knuckles meet my enemy's lips. But I know that will not solve anything, but it will make me feel a whole lot better. So I open my hands and find myself meditating in the prison that Mandela once prayed in, scraping for salvation in the mines of Africa, cries of lost families harmonizing with the wind. Crush these hands. The only thing you will force me to achieve is for me to learn how to write with my mouth. Mom, I don't want to fight, so I'm going to do the best thing I know how to do. I am going to write. I'm going to write until my fingers pop and request
the DeAndre pain. Was a young man who we met initially at Broadmoor High School, where he was the kid really in the back of class, head down, muttering things under his breath, you know, when the teacher was speaking. And you, the kind of kid whose genius would really just be looked over, I think, in most classrooms. The writing that he did, just it would take him, you know, 40 minutes to get that line down, you know. But then once, with a little bit of love, with a little bit of encouragement, with a space to sort of hold that genius, it just started to pour out, right? Mm. And this whole self gets born, you know, this whole person that you can be, you know. This is, you know, of course in high school you've got the jocks and you got the weird kids and you got all these identities. Poetry, the poet is an identity now. You know, that's what we're creating, and that's what's being born through these kinds of programs. That there are whole groups of kids that call themselves poet, and they're walking down the hallways of school, and they're like, you know, hey man, I got a new piece. You want to hear my piece? You know, and like they're, you know, and they're boys, and they're like, you know, kids that we don't normally think of as being as poets. You know, we don't normally think to include them in that label.
Anna West, I want you to locate these young voices in two different dimensions. One, on the all-time scale, going back to Homer, but the bardic tradition of performance, and then horizontally, so to speak, in the world of high school, 2011, the age of Obama, What are the 6 or 5 or 2 degrees of separation here that we're listening to?
Right. Well, when we talk about the bardic tradition, we talk about Homer. Of course, we're talking about spoken word, right? You know, people talk about spoken word as if it's this kind of contemporary cultural movement, but really,
rap.
It's right, exactly. And it's but it's but what it's doing is it's tapping into an ancient art, which is the art of taking the verse and putting it right here in the space between you and I as a way for us to connect with one another, right? So spoken word is putting the poetry. I mean, in some ways we think like that the poem on the page is in some way unmediated because I'm reading it and hearing just the pure poem. I think that that's one way to think about the poem on the page, but actually the poem from the body, which is what's happening with spoken word performance, is in some ways even less mediated because it's coming, even though we've sort of added these dimensions of voice and added these dimensions of body, what they've done is they've put the poem right into the immediate moment. And so in terms of this tradition of poetry as something that would happen at the hearth, as a way for people to tell stories and to share histories with one another, the tradition of the griot, I think that what we're doing is a very ancient thing. We're also drawing directly from hip-hop culture in big ways. I mean, here's the thread. I think that those of us who kind of are outside of the culture of hip-hop think of it as in its commercialized form. We think about this commercialized thing, which is actually something that has been co-opted, souped up and sold back, right? That's what we think of as hip-hop, as this thing that's been sold back to people in its commercialized form. But underneath that, there's this entire fabric of participatory culture, which is really where it comes from. This idea that Joey around the corner has got crazy skills, right? And he's got things and he's a maker of culture, not simply a consumer of culture, but somebody that can make culture. And that possibility that we are not simply consumers of culture, but also makers of culture, is, I think, we're going to put this into the current moment of not just high schools or not just Obama, but actually the whole cultural moment that we're in. I think participation is the moment.
I wonder, do you tell Joey or does Joey tell you? Like, stand back,
right,
Miss West. I got something to tell you.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was thinking recently about students that I've worked with in Louisiana who were, as I was describing earlier, I think students who in many schools that are very shut down. And I was just, this image was running through my mind of young men at Estruma High School who sort of under their breath are rapping, right? They're rapping, and kids are often rapping their own lyrics, but they're also rapping, you know, the latest 50 Cent song, or you know, there's this kind of soundtrack going on, you know, that's sort of under their breath. It's right there. Now, the question I think for us as educators who are really trying to bring quote unquote Joey into the room, right? So that we can really be in conversation. So that
I'm
we
Joey,
can.
You know.
You're okay, Joey. I'm trying to bring you into the room. Is to open up a space for that thing that's already happening under the breath there, for that to actually come out into the space between us, to actually engage the culture that you're bringing into the room, and to not shut that culture down, but to actually listen to it and then connect it. Then to draw the connections between that culture that you're bringing into the room and all of the other poetry that is nested around it, right? So like we're listening to what you bring into the room, and then we're also connecting it to a literary tradition, so that it's not just, you know, hanging back from what this project is of education, which is a project of essentially making connections.
Makes sense to me, Anna West. One more poem, please, if you will, out of this kind of living undercurrent of the poetry in all of our lives.
I'm going to read one of my own poems.
Please.
This poem, just because we've been talking so much about these classroom spaces and what actually happens there, this is one of my own poems. It's called Jeremy in Poetry Workshop. 1. Jeremy, tilting back in his chair, like so many crisscrossed in class rows, boys dangerous about the mouth, fluent in the language of falling back, smirking. 2. T teacher urges him to write one word on paper, just one word to begin. Jeremy creases his arms, shirks at smiles, looks like to say, "What a fool you must be showing up here with this poem shit. Go find someone else to teach this shit to." 3. A ball of paper closed and swallowed. 4. Jeremy would not write one word in class, one word he knew would seize everything, would bring other words down to bear, could wind up in his hands bloody like a baby's howling face. 4. But then, one day, he does. Pick up the pencil, the cool stone move up and down his throat, his mouth open, the voices break and lightning down his arm, storm clouds heavy on loose leaf horizon, two stanzas, thick, black, scrawling promise of rain. Jeremy watched them hover there, just as bewildered as any reader asking himself, what does this mean?
I get it. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And this poem, of course, is not a poem I think that people would think of as, quote unquote, spoken word. And, you know, often those of us who work in that art form, which I like to say is really, it's an aesthetic in some senses, but it's a context, really. Spoken word is a context. It's the context of, like, I'm writing this poem with the intent that I will bring it to you on, published in my body and in a performance space. And so there's a lot of things that are happening in those spaces that push the boundaries of what we normally think of as that aesthetic. And I think that my own work as a poet, I hang with the spoken word poets. That's the context in which I work. But all of my work doesn't necessarily fit inside of, I think, what we think of as that aesthetic.
Anna West, thank you for bringing it into our space, and I can't wait to see Louder Than a Bomb and hear you read again at the Massachusetts Poetry Festival.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much.
The Massachusetts Poetry Festival runs May 13th and 14th in the witch-burning city of Salem, north of Boston. See masspoetry.org for details. Ben Mandelkern produced and edited this conversation. Special thanks to the Grolier Poetry Bookshop in Harvard Square for letting us make a studio of their store. Feedback with a comment at our website, please, at radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lighton. Thank you for being part of the conversation.